And hey, we're here. Here we are. Yay! Once again. Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.herncoat.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. And yeah, I'm moving right along here, folks, tonight. Heavily caffeinated. having a good old time. Looking through the news. A lot of funny stuff going on out there tonight. California's got itself up in arms once again. A federal appeals court today put same-sex weddings in California on hold indefinitely while it considers the constitutionality of the state's gay marriage ban. Now, the decision, issued by a three-judge panel of all places, the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, trumps a lower court judge's order that would have allowed county clerks to begin issuing marriage licenses to same-sex couples on Wednesday. Lawyers for the two gay couples that challenged the ban said today they would not appeal the panel's decision on the way to the Supreme Court. In its two-page order granting the stay, the Ninth Circuit agreed to expedite its consideration of the Proposition 8 case. The court plans to hear the case during the week of December 6th after moving up deadlines for both sides to file their written arguments by the 1st of November. And we are very gratified that the Ninth Circuit has recognized the importance and the pressing nature of this case by issuing this extremely expedited briefing schedule, said Tom Boutros, a member of the plaintiff's legal team. A different three-judge panel than the one that issued today's decision will be assigned to decide the constitutional question. Now, Chief U.S. District Court Judge Vaughn Walker decided last week to allow gay marriages to go forward after ruling the ban violated equal protection and due process rights of gays and lesbians guaranteed under the U.S. Constitution. The Proposition 8 legal team quickly appealed Walker's ruling in the case many believe will end up before the Supreme Court. Now, lawyers for the two same-sex couples had joined with California Attorney General Jerry Brown in urging the appeals court to allow the weddings, arguing that keeping the ban in place any longer would harm the civil rights of gays and lesbians. Now, Walker presided over a 13-day trial earlier this year that was the first in federal court to examine if states can prohibit gays from getting married without violating the constitutional guarantee of equality. Supporters argued the ban was necessary to safeguard the traditional understanding of marriage and to encourage responsible childbearing. Opponents said the tradition or fears of harm to heterosexual unions were legally insufficient grounds to discriminate against gay couples. Now, currently, same-sex couples can legally wed only in Massachusetts, Iowa, Connecticut, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Washington, D.C. ACDC. You just gotta love it. Yeah, now I'll tell you, folks, I am more and more humored by this all the time. You know, there was a point in time here when I was said, look, this whole gay marriage thing, this it has nothing to do with gay marriage. And for a while, especially here in Massachusetts, it didn't. The only precedent that was set here in Massachusetts was whether or not court here in Massachusetts could order around the legislature, you know, which it took it upon itself to do, although still the legislature has not followed the order. Basically what happened is they turned around and told the legislature, they gave them 30 or 60 days or 90 days, whatever it was, to amend the Constitution because their written statement in it was the fact that Massachusetts Constitution does not allow any laws that would create a second class of citizenship. At least that's what they claim. And even though I've gone and read this Constitution, I can't seem to find that exact wording in it anywhere. But really, what happened there? Now, the legislature actually never moved on it. But they didn't move against it either. We had a referendum vote here in the state, which basically shot it right down, or would have shot it right down, had referendum votes been held as binding. But here in Massachusetts, referendum votes are not binding upon the legislature. We still have a Republican form of government here in Mass. So it's basically a moot point. Now, you know, I personally looked at it as a very weak, or at least a showing of weakness by the then Governor Mitt Romney, who should have turned around and told the legislature, no, you don't have to do that. Sorry. You know, they are an equal branch of government. We have three equal branches of government, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. And they're all there to, you know, that's the checks and balances, you know. And I can always see the Supreme, the SJC, turning down the legislature for trying to pass a law that was unconstitutional. But ordering it to make a law, and no, that's another story altogether. All together, that's a completely another story, you know. And at that point in time, they have, you know, they could put a constitutional check on the Supreme Court. Well, it never really happened. But what happened here was just basically word came down from the underlings, the officials in charge, to go ahead and start issuing licenses. Yeah, so it was kind of like, well, they did it anyway, but they never really made any legislation that would approve it, or any legislation that would shoot it down. Of course, this was hailed as a huge big bonus here for all the gays, you know, a big victory for all of the gays. Now we can finally get married. You know, too bad you can't have children like everyone else, which to me, and I've always said, you know, the legal definition of a marriage is something that's always going to be subject to interpretation. But the traditional definition of a marriage isn't just a union of a man and a woman. It's where a man and a woman join together and become one person. Now, you know, it goes way back into antiquity, based on property rights. You know, a woman was a man's property. You know, his wife was his property, and it was done out in public to make sure that everybody knew that was his property. And nobody could come along and tear it apart, you know, not for any reason whatsoever. And should somebody, you know, you catch somebody with one of your wives, you know, from ancient times, you could kill that person and probably get away with it. But still, it's still, you know, traditionally, you know, and through, if you look at the older laws that come on out here, and I point to the Catholic Church more than anything else here as, you know, a prime example of where these laws have come from. It always meant two people join together and become one person. And the Catholic Church would affirm this by allowing an annulment to take place, or granting an annulment to any couple that was childless. You know, if you and your wife got married, and after trying for a number of years, you could not produce children, the church would basically issue you an annulment if you asked for it. And an annulment was a statement that says that, basically, that a marriage never existed there. And if there was no children in there, that was the key thing. They couldn't turn you down if you had no children. If you tried to produce children, you couldn't do it. Because there, a marriage always had to be consummated. And it wasn't just going to bed that consummated a marriage. It was the actual production of children that proved that a marriage was consummated. You know, if for any reason God sought not to give you two children, well, the church would just turn around and say, hey, you know, God must have had other plans for the two of you. Here you go. Here's your annulment. Now, of course, later on in time, you could buy an annulment. You know, with enough money, you could get a hold of anything. You know, I've never said that the church wasn't corrupt, you know, but through its legislation and through, you know, through its musings and meanderings and thought processes over the last 2,000 years, you know, the two people joining together and become one person has been the bottom definition. Now, a lot of you gays out there are going to say, ah, listen to BB, he doesn't want to give him the rights. Listen to that guy. Well, you know, how is this going to affect your marriage? What has this got to do with your marriage? Well, absolutely nothing. But I would stop and caution you to think about the destruction of values, which is another big one here. A family is a value. To have a family, you know, with children that you can take care of, that you can mold, that you can guide, okay, and who will take care of you later on in life, you know, is a tithe of something that's, you know, hey, that's a God-given thing the way I look at it. You know, blood has always been thicker than water. And certainly it's always been thicker than ink. You know, let's make that point perfectly clear. You know, for you to pass on your genes is part of your immortality. You know, I don't know whether or not there's a next life beyond death. But I do know this, that I live on in my children. You know, my parents live on in me. You know, my grandparents live on in me and in my children and in my grandchildren now that I have a grandson. You know, it's pretty wild. I mean, if you stop and think about it. But the family has always been the primary social unit. You know, and it's something else that you really got to think about here. You know, Your family is always going to be the toughest on you and will also always be the first there to pick you up should you fall down. You know, if you prove to your family that you are no good, your family will toss you aside. But if you are of any value whatsoever, your family will always be the first to be there to take care of you should something happen. You know, you will always be there for your family in much the same manner. And this is a value. This is a social value. It is the first primary basic social system that has always been around since the beginning of time. Families take care of each other. Now, I'm not saying that other groups don't get together and, you know, couldn't fashion to put themselves together into some side of shape one way or another, or in almost the same way, you know. But, look. You turn around and you say to each other, no, if you don't have those blood ties, trust me, a whole lot quicker to get rid of you if you are a miscreant than if you do have the blood ties. I mean, it's that simple. It may be, you might sit there and believe that you have something that is as strong as a family, but screw up and see what happens. You know, see how strong those family ties really are. And I mean, some of these marriages that have gone on here in Massachusetts, they've already gone and sought divorces. Matter of fact, we had one case here 3-4 months ago where the couple that got married here in Massachusetts decided to move back to Rhode Island, and after they got PO'd at each other, two gay women decided to get a divorce. And Rhode Island told them, no, we're not going to give you a divorce. The way we see it, you're not even really married. Why would we bother giving you a divorce? You know, because they don't recognize the whole gay marriage deal. So it's kind of like they were left in limbo. I don't know what they ended up doing after that. But the destruction of that value really occurs in your kids. You really don't want your kids growing up thinking that, a gay marriage is the same as, a real marriage is a marriage between a man and a woman that actually produces, you know, genetic offspring. Because it isn't. It's not the same thing. It does not have the same values, you know. And one of the ways that the left has always used to destroy values, especially when it's a value that is obvious, that is right there, standing right in front of you and cannot be denied, is to take that value and hold up other things and tell you that they are just as valuable. Because that's exactly where they come from here. If you want to destroy a value, you don't attack that value. What you do is you hold up a lot of nonsense around it and say, well, it's of the same value. You know? Kind of like, calling people special. If everyone in the world was special, well, then really no one would be special, would they? You know, if everybody in the world was able to get married to anybody else whenever they pleased or for whatever reason, well, marriage really wouldn't be a special thing anymore, would it? You know, and that is how you effectively destroy a value. You know, and this is something that's been going on for a long, long time. I mean, where do you hide a tree? You hide it in a forest. You know, one of the prime examples that I give, and is look at all the artists there are out there. You know, most people can take a look at a piece of art and say, hey, this person really did something here. You know, or what the hell did this guy do? He threw a bunch of paint against the wall and tried to see what would stick. Now, obviously, he found somebody out there that thinks that all art is the same and it all has the same value. Maybe he likes this more or the other. And, of course, it's always going to be true that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You know, but there are those out there that will just put up trash and sit there and say to you, well, geez, if you can't see the beauty in that, I can't explain it to you. Of course, that's always the dead giveaway when it comes down to the real destruction of values. But it's one of those things that's been going on for a long time. You know, I mean, look at what they're doing with kids nowadays with ball games and stuff. Well, we didn't really keep score. You know, we just hit the ball and we ran around the bases. Well, you know, we didn't really keep score. We just kicked the ball into the net, and then we went back up the other side and kicked it into the net over there. And they wonder why the kids these days are apathetic about things, why they don't care. You know, it's a funny damn thing, but you destroy a value system. And if you're out to destroy a value system, this is how you do it. You just hold up things that have no value whatsoever and tell everyone, well, they're of the same value. So that's really what this whole gay marriage thing is all about. It's a farce. It's a destruction of values. Excuse me. It's nuttiness reigning supreme once again. All right, we got somebody in the room here that wants to add to this. Somebody named Net Warrior, old friend of mine. Hey, why don't you step up and I will give you the microphone, my friend. You are on the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com.
their intention is to create an amoral society, to no right, no wrong, no accountability. Do what you want. If it feels good, hey, do it. That's what they're after.
Oh, I agree. I agree. You know, well, it's like an amoral society is one that has no values. You know, what's the point? You know, you don't want, if there's no values, then there's nothing to achieve. You know, there's nothing to strive for, nothing to compete against others for. And competition is one of the things that have always scared the left out there. You know, they believe that people get destroyed by competition. A lot of times they do. You know, that if you're into competing in something and you lose, well, you know, how long are you going to continue to lose before you give it up and go on to something else? You know, but, you know, anybody out there that has ever competed and won at anything knows the value of winning at it. You know, knows what it was to take, knows what it took. I mean, I always look the same way at marriage. Look, two guys are always going to be able to get along with each other easier than a guy and a girl. Let's face it, make no mistake about it. Now, I would have to assume that the same thing happens for women. Although, I'll tell you right now, as far as what's going on in any woman's head, hey, any man that tells you he knows what's going on in any woman's head is either gay or a liar. It's that simple. I don't even know, gay guys out there, obviously they know what goes on in a woman's head. They know how to get rich on it. That's why they become interior designers and hairdressers and cosmetologists and all the rest of it. You know, make no mistake about it. I mean, they do, you know. But any other man who tries to tell you he knows what's going on in a woman's head is lying to you because he doesn't know. I've been married for 34 years. I'm not about to try to tell you what's going on in my wife's head. I gave up guessing what that was 30 years ago, you know. Yeah, well, you mean a sexist. Sorry, big booty Judy. But the point of the fact of the matter here is you can't gainsay anything I'm saying here. You know, because I speak the truth. But it's always going to be easier for two guys to get along with each other. You know, no doubt about it. So they don't really have as high of a ladder to climb to get to their friendship. But to go out and woo and coo a member of the opposite sex and talk her into marrying you, that's a chore. Okay? You know, that's a struggle. That's a mountain to climb. That's a huge ladder. And once you've climbed that ladder, you know what it was that you achieved. You know what it was that you had to put into that to manage to talk that girl into marrying you. That was no easy thing, you know. It wasn't as easy as taking one of your buddies out for a beer, you know. Not at all, you know. It was a long, hard struggle, and when you finally overcame, you realized the value of it. You know, it was a value of something you wish to obtain and keep, you know. But I've blown 20 minutes of time here talking about gay marriage, and I still think it's a joke. I really do. I think it's funnier now. We got too much other stuff to go on in the news here. Next thing I really wanted to get into here, Tom DeLay tonight. Tom DeLay, former Republican Speaker of the House of Representatives, said today that he had been cleared by the Justice Department in its long-running political corruption probe. DeLay, 63, became a focus in the government's probe of influence peddling by Jack Abramoff, a lobbyist who later pleaded guilty and had contact congressional aides. Now, DeLay resigned from Congress in 2006 amid questions about his ties to Abramoff, and after he was indicted in his home state of Texas for alleged campaign finance violations, charges he is still fighting. Now, two of his former aides pleaded guilty in the Abramoff scandal, as did former Republican Representative Bob Ney, who admitted he illegally accepted trips, meals, concert tickets, and other valuable items in exchange for official acts on behalf of Abramoff and his clients. Now, it was good news to hear from the Justice Department that I've been cleared, DeLay told reporters during a conference call. I've always known this day would come. My only hope was that it would come much sooner. Now, while he lamented to reporters that he was being connected to the Abramoff scandal, DeLay said that he had considered the former lobbyist a friend of mine. We worked together professionally. He never asked me to do anything untoward, nor did I do anything untoward or unethical, DeLay said. In his 2006 midterm congressional elections, Democrats focused on the corruption issue, which helped them retake control of the House of Representatives from Republicans that year. Now, DeLay, 63, served as House Speaker from 2003 to 2005 and now runs his own political consulting firm. The campaign finance case in Texas has yet to go to trial, and DeLay has called it politically motivated, noting the prosecutors were Democrats. Abramoff struck a plea deal with U.S. prosecutors and was sentenced to 4 years in federal prison in the corruption scandal. He is now at a low-security community corrections facility in Maryland, according to the Bureau of of prisons, which is where he should be. All right, Abramoff is just doing the wrong thing, lobbying in the wrong way, using the wrong methods, and, hey, let's face it, buddy, sorry, you don't do those kind of things. That is called bribery. That all comes underneath the corruption here. But Tom DeLay cleared of it by the federal prosecutors. And I would assume that everything that the federal prosecutors have used as evidence to clear him will be held up again in the Texas case. So I like Tom DeLay, and I'm glad to hear that this is going well for him. Good for Tom DeLay. All right, elsewhere in the news tonight, Ed Obama is out there telling voters, don't give in to fear. You gotta love this, folks. Now, this is by Ben Feller, AP White House correspondent, which, as always, folks, articles read on this program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. And do not be construed to think I'm making any money on this. I am not, so don't even think about suing me over it. It's already in a public domain. Flying thousands of miles to reap millions of dollars, President Barack Obama is dashing across the country to help his party retain power, essentially offering one familiar argument. Republicans don't solve problems. Don't give in to fear, Obama said today in his latest ominous vision of a country led by the opposition party. Let's reach for hope. Obama has settled on his message for the pivotal midterm elections, which means he said today in Milwaukee will sound like what he says Tuesday in Seattle and Wednesday in Miami. He is covering more than 8,000 freewheeling miles in 3 days, the kind of personal attention that gets donors to the door. This week offers not just a window for Obama to campaign, Congress is gone, his summer vacation awaits, but also a window into his thinking about the fall campaign. Now, despite deep voter impatience over the sickly economy, the White House is betting people will stick with Democrats if the choice is framed as one between those who act and those who obstruct. On Monday, he warned of relieving a dreadful past, saying Republicans want voters to be afraid of the future. The worst thing we could do is go back to the very same policies that created this mess in the first place, Obama said at a fundraiser in Wisconsin. In November, you're going to have that choice. And blah, 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 blah. He's basically going out there trying to repeat the, you know, you have nothing to fear but fear itself. And I robbed that one off of FDR there from way back. Yeah, that's not really going to work here. You know, the fact of the matter is, Obama, the biggest thing that we had to fear was the TARP bill that George Bush signed into law. And who was it that was there begging him to sign it into law? Well, you and the miscreant that we were running against, John McCain. Right? And to think that, you know, that you didn't want that, well, no, that's not really true now, is it? Okay, because on its heels, you signed the American Economic Recovery Act. All right, well, let's face it, the slush fund, the porculous bill that came down the road in January of the, well, February of the very next year, you know, right after your election. So give it up, Eddie. All right, what have you done on top of that? Well, you've turned around and you've given our healthcare system over to the four giant insurance companies in this country, you know, with your pledge that you were going to end the corporate corruption. Really? Let's see. I would say that with the healthcare bill, you have taken corporate corruption to heights that this country has never seen. You know, I still wonder to this day whether or not that man has any idea what was in that bill. But I certainly believe he knows exactly what was in the last bill that went down here, the financial regulation. Which is going to wreak more havoc as the days come on and on here. Now, I got other things here, and I guess I got about a minute before I get to it. But there is a good one on, and it's over on the AFP. Let me find where I got my AFP stack of stuff here. That's AP. Here we go. It's, yeah, well, I said, oh, here, blah, 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 blah. But it's coming down because they're already out there getting, No, I'll tell you what, folks, I'll look for this a little bit of a break here. We're going to go to a break right on time. Folks, listen, I'll be right back, and I'm definitely going to get into more on this healthcare bill and whatnot that's going down today. Sebelius came out and gave some more action on it. But, folks, right now, you are listening to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com. We will be back just after these messages from Bob, our sponsor.
Style and Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through.
Do your part by going to boostup.org and giving a student the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called inventnow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com, the best in internet talk radio. All right, now, I started to talk about the insurance bill. And this came down off of the Reuters network today by John Lentz. It's an interesting article. It's one of those kind of articles you really got to read between the lines on here. And let me read it to you first, and we're going to parse this out a little bit. A $46 million round of grants will help U.S. states boost oversight of health insurance premium hikes and keep down costs, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services said today. All but a few states will receive $1 million each to require stricter rules for approving rate increases and clearer rate information for consumers and to promote stronger state legislation. The grants are the first round of a five-year $250 million program. Having that kind of more rigorous state review on the ground in states around the country is just going to be a real step forward for many consumers in America, according to HHS Secretary Kathleen Sebelius today. Now, Sebelius has already called on insurance companies to justify hikes, prompting some to withdraw or adjust rates. The Obama administration, sensitive to defending health reform ahead of the November midterm elections, has been pressuring the multi-billion-dollar industry for months. Now, in February, Sebelius chided Anthem Blue Cross of California for rate increases as high as 39%. Parent company WellPoint Incorporated, the largest U.S. health insurance insurer, later acknowledged inadvertent errors and filed for smaller rate increases. Industry spokesman Robert Zirkelback of America's Health Insurance Plans said the focus should be on rising medical costs, the real driver of health insurance premiums. Now, we strongly support greater transparency so that patients know exactly what is driving up health insurance premiums, Zirkelback said. States vary in their level of oversight, with some requiring companies to submit rates for prior approval and others requiring no action. Just over half of the states can now reject proposed increases that are excessive or unjustified, according to HHS. Now, 45 states and the District of Columbia will get grant funding sent out on Monday and Tuesday. 15 will pursue stronger legislation, and 21 will expand the scope of their current review, HHS said. Now, people who live and work in the state will benefit from insurance rate review if it's conducted with a sharp and skeptical eye. Alan Sager, a professor of health policy and management at Boston University School of Public Health, said in an interview, Alaska, Georgia, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wyoming did not apply. Sebelius said she would work with those states to see why they did not seek funding. Yeah, I'll tell you why. The more of that review that could be done up front on the ground, understanding the markets locally, understanding the solvency issues, which are part of the puzzle, the better off we are, she said. The measure is one of several in the healthcare law aimed at insurance companies. Provisions going into effect in 2011 set a mandate a review of unreasonable, quote unquote, rate hikes and compliance with standards on how much of each dollar must be spent on medical costs, though final rules have not been released. All right, now, fellas, like I said here, this is, once again, this is one of those kind of things where the government is telling you what it's doing, but it's not telling you what it's really doing or why. All right? Now, let me explain something here to you. They just sent out a round of $46 million in grants to states to oversee health insurance, especially the health insurance rate hikes. Now, excuse me, but why would this be necessary, seeing as how these states are all going to be coming in under a federal system in a few years? What is the point? Well, I can tell you exactly what the point is. All right, they're going to go out there and they are going to wreak havoc with consumers and with the insurance companies in order to get these people so frustrated that they get out of business. That's what it's going to be. This is what you call the government putting pressure on those who will be out there trying to compete in the marketplace. Now, where you have a free marketplace in places like Alaska, and I would especially say Iowa, and a couple of the other states that you have down here, all right, the states that did not seek this funding, and I guarantee you Iowa will not accept it, are states where there are no laws mandating on what is required coverage, or no laws whatsoever that cover how insurance works. Now, in Iowa especially, a good plan for a family in Iowa costs about $1,100 a year. Now, if you compare that to New York or New Jersey or any of the states up here in the Northeast, well, excepting maybe Massachusetts, but that's another story, you're going to look at something that's going to be between $6,000 and $9,000 a year. Now, compare that to the $1,100 a year in a state that has no mandates. You can go in and buy yourself a tailor-made plan for insurances that you will need. It does not have the state-mandated carriers on there for 1,000 different diseases that you and your family will never get. Congenital diseases, and a ton of other stuff, you know. You may or may not want to have care for mental health. You may or may not want to have care for drug rehabilitation. You may or may not want to have care for a host of other things that are offered by the insurance companies in other states because they have been mandated by those states. All right, so let's stop and think about this. But now all of a sudden, these people are paying the states to start cracking down on insurance companies. What it's making them do is produce more paperwork out of anything else that goes on around there. It's insane to stop and think about it, okay? Is that what you've got these states out there, okay, that are running ragged all over their insurance companies now. Now, the reason that they're doing this is because most of the funding that's coming to them isn't coming out of the state coffers, okay? It's coming from the federal coffers, and the feds are riding the state governments. Everything that's going on out there right now, and you know this, just by reading through an article like this, is these people are riding roughshod right across these people. These small insurance companies out there, they've got spur marks up and down their side, all right, and they're getting buried in a sea of paperwork like nothing else, like they've never seen. Now, in order for them to justify their rates, they're going to have to come out with report after report after report by committee after committee after committee. And each and every one of these will be challenged by miscreants who will just sit there and say, why? How come? Why is this? One of the reasons they're doing this, and you have one of the people out here. Now, one of the biggest companies out there, all right, and I guarantee you WellPoint Incorporated is probably one of the ones that are having this bill passed to begin with. What did they do? Well, they raised their heights up real high, 39%. And then when everybody cried about it, they went right back down and, you know, filed for smaller rate increases, quote unquote. Look, they're playing the game. That's all they are doing out here. They know how the game is played. All right, well, let's face it. Another thing that's being tried to be hid here is the inadvertent, or not inadvertent, but the, what's the word that I'm looking for here? The latent rise in all of the prices here. The price for medical care that keeps rising and rising and rising. All right, and folks, yes, there are some new technologies that come out there all the time. There's new machinery, there's new equipment, there are new procedures. There are lots of things. They don't come out not all that fast. They save time and money and do a lot of, you know, things that new procedures would do. But what they're trying to hide is those rising costs. And the costs, you have to turn around and point at one single stupid, silly little thing here. All right? It's called inflation. How many times have you heard me go, all right, this is the destroying of the purchasing power of the dollar that you work for. Make no mistake about it. All right, inflation is going on in a very bad way out there. You don't hear about this on the news. I mean, you don't hear about it on anybody's news out there. That includes Fox News, you know, which is something that you really should be getting down on in a bad way. Glenn Beck, I hope you're listening out there tonight. I know you've listened before. Point of the matter is here, inflation is one of the single biggest killers of the economy in this country. It always has been, always will be. You got to cure the inflation. All right, you've got a company out there that is giving us a product to use that's giving us very, very, very poor service. All right, any other company out there, you newsboys would be driving all over on. And if it was a company that you were forced to deal with that was giving you the crummiest service in the world, you would be getting down on them. Time for you to get down on the Federal Reserve. All right, they are giving us a product, our paper dollars, which does not give the performance of any other product that we expect to buy in the marketplace. The quality is not there. Its staying power is not there. All right? I'm not here to argue the benefits of fiat money versus sound money tonight. You know, let's just say the fiat money we're stuck with. Well, as such, it is a product of a large corporation. And if we were to take that kind of abuse from any other product, from any other large corporation, we would be jumping up and down and crying to Congress and crying to the newspapers and crying to television about how crappy it is. Comedians would be all over it, all across all of the cable news channels and HBO and Showtime and everything else. You know, but the fact of the matter is, this is one that nobody seems to want to touch except for guys like me. You know, those of us out here on the internet who are looking at it and who see it. You know, this is strictly inflation that is driving these prices up right here. All right, you're not going to be able to hide this inflation any way you look at it. All right, so folks, this is something that we got to look at. And I want to tell you that the final line, Jay, that really should open your eyes up is, you know, the final paragraph. The measure is one of several in the healthcare law aimed at insurance companies. Provisions going into effect in 2011 mandate. In 2011, mandate a review of unreasonable rate hikes and compliance with standards on how much of each dollar must be spent on medical costs. And here's the kicker. Though final rules have not been released. All right, now these are rules. They're not going to be regulations, and these rules are going to be coming down from the top, from Kathleen Sebelius or whoever else is sitting in her seat when the time comes for these rules to come out. All right, but these will not be rules that will be voted on by your congressman. These are not rules that will be entered as a bill into the House and or Senate and then voted on by the opposite House and signed into law by the president. They are rules, okay? They are rules that have been made by unelected officials that will govern your life. Something else that you really need to think about there. All right? I mean, I look at Kathleen Sebelius not as being the Secretary of Health and Human Services. This is the health czar. All right, might as well have the word Caesar next to her name, because the rules that she writes, everybody's going to have to go by, right or wrong, or thought about or not thought about. It's silliness any way you look at it. All right, elsewhere in the news here tonight. No, there was a good one. No. Oh, here's a nice one here. Mexico puts tariffs on more U.S. goods in the truck route. This is down off the Reuters network by Micah Rosenberg. Now, Mexico on Monday expanded the list of U.S. products subject to retaliatory tariffs as it steps up pressure on Washington to settle a wrong kept Mexican long-haul trucks off U.S. roads. Now, the government of President Felipe Calderon was infuriated last year when U.S. lawmakers voted to cancel funding for a pilot begun under U.S. President George W. Bush, allowing long-haul Mexican trucks to circulate in the United States. Under the North American Free Trade Agreement, which took effect in 1994, the U.S. agreed to open its market to Mexican trucks. Mexico said the United States was not living up to its end of the deal and retaliated by imposing duties on a long list of U.S. exports, including fruit, vegetables, and industrial goods. Now, Mexico's economy minister, Bruno Ferrari, said despite the clampdown on certain U.S. products, negotiations were still stalled, forcing Mexico to take new action. You know why negotiations haven't been stalled here, folks? Obama is paying no attention. All right, he's busy doing other things. He's campaigning right now. We're not delaying this anymore. This cannot continue, he told a news conference. Mexico has not received a formal proposal to resolve this situation, which is affecting Mexican truckers and has hurt trade and competitive in North America. Well, there you have it, folks. They haven't gotten anything. Nobody's stalling him, and nobody's paying any attention to him. It's like he's not paying attention to everything else that's going on that side of the border, which will explode if they keep it up. Mexico's embassy in Washington said the revised list will include 99 products, up from 89 currently. Now, U.S. business groups say the dispute has threatened thousands of U.S. jobs and hit bilateral trade. U.S. Transportation Department spokesman Olivia Allaire said the agency was developing a new proposal that would meet U.S. commitments under NAFTA and address concerns raised in Congress about Mexican long-haul truckers. Mexico is an important U.S. export market, and President Obama understands the economic pain that these tariffs cause for American farmers, companies, and workers. U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk said in a separate statement. Yeah, of course he understands it. Why doesn't he sit down at the table and do something about it? Too busy trying to get his boys reelected. Now, Congress terminated the trucking program on a basis of safety concerns. Critics accuse lawmakers of bowing to protectionist pressures from the U.S. Teamsters Union. Oh, it was safety concerns. Thank you. The basic underlying issue has not changed in that the U.S. has violated the terms of a trade agreement and thousands of U.S. manufacturing jobs are at risk if the administration and Congress don't take the necessary steps towards compliance, said Doug Goody, Director for International Trade Policy at the National Association of Manufacturers. Now, the plan is to remove certain U.S. products and add others, including pork, without significantly changing the total value of trade from around $2.5 billion, a limit stipulated by the North American Free Trade Agreement. Now, Ferrari said Mexico will keep revising the list to affect a broader spectrum of goods. The aim is to pressure U.S. businesses to push for government action. Now, Ricardo Alde, the spokesman for Mexico's embassy in Washington, said pork was one of the 54 U.S. agricultural items that would be on the revised list, although it was not clear what specific pork products would be included. The National Pork Producers Council said it had been urging the Obama administration to work with Congress to resolve the issue and was disappointed by the lack of progress. The council said the retaliatory tariff was unlikely to be high enough to stop the flow of exports to Mexico, its number two market by value. Now, with current prices of various pork cuts being so high, any issue is going to be significant, said Don Norcini, an independent hog trader. In addition to pork, several agricultural and food items would be adding to the list, including some cheeses, sweet corn, oranges, grapefruits, chewing gum, ketchup, and some chocolates. An official familiar with the details said only one agricultural item would be removed, peanuts. Several manufactured items would be removed, including telephone equipment, metal furniture, certain textiles, and paper products, locks, and some carpet, said the official. Well, of course, you know, these are the people who were smart enough to send people down to Mexico to bribe them. Let's face it, that's really what it's all about here, okay? Now, if the pork people were to get down there and bribe these people, they might find things a little different. But the problem that we're having here is, of course, once again, the truckers hitting our roads. Now, what I don't understand is why is it that under the North American Free Trade Agreement, and folks, if you look on a lot of maps that are given out there right now, a lot of your interstate highways that connect with Mexico are called NAFTA highways. Something you might want to take a peek into at some point. But, this is just, it's insanity, folks. It's complete insanity what's going on down here. And what you have is an administration that is not paying any attention to what is going on down there. Now, I don't remember the girl's name or the lady's name, but one of the representatives, one of the congressional representatives from, I believe, Texas and or New Mexico has said right now she believes that a lot of the border violence that is going on the other side down there has got Hezbollah behind it. Now, we know that Hezbollah has been working in various places around the world, including Venezuela and in Colombia. And to think that they might not be on our border wreaking havoc, all right? And I'll tell you why she's going on with this, because it was a car bomb that went off down there the other day, just like one of the ones that goes off in the Middle East. There are things happening down on that border, folks, that we have to wake up on. There are things going on in Mexico. We have got a problem, and the problem is not the southern border. It's the country that sits on the other side of that southern border. You know, I'm here to tell you something, folks. Those Mexicans aren't coming up here for a reason, okay? The point is that they're not coming here. They are fleeing there. And there is a reason that they are fleeing there, because basically Mexico sucks. You know, let's face it. You know, any way you look at it, whatever the hell it is that's going on down in Mexico is not good for the Mexican people. This is why most of the Mexican people have found their way up here. Some measure of freedom, some measure of freedom to work, some measure of freedom to keep whatever the hell it is they're earning, and the opportunity to earn something, all of which do not exist in Mexico. You know, on top of that, you've got corrupt governments, you've got corrupt police forces. You just got a madhouse going on across our southern border. You know, if we think it is right for us to go into places like Iraq and liberate the people from a tyranny, we think it was right to go in and liberate the Afghani people from a tyranny, why is it that we can't see the problems that we have on a country that we share a border with? Am I condoning an attack on the Mexicans? Yep, sure am. I think Mexico should be taken over and annexed. I'm a firm believer in making the Obama's 57 states, taking the 7 states of Mexico and adding them right to the other 50 United States of America. Take down the Mexican flag, fly the American flag right over it. Move in, install the Pax Americana. Yes, I have said my piece on that, and I firmly believe it and will stand by it. If the Mexicans can't figure out their problems, if they can't fix the violence that is going down on there, the violence which is spreading across that border and into our country, it is time for us to go down and fix it for them. You know, because I'm here to tell you, folks, they haven't been able to do it themselves. All right? Let's face it, they can't do it themselves. They don't have what it takes. They either don't have the will, they don't have the resolve, or they don't have the wherewithal. Well, whatever it is that they are lacking, it's time for them to come up. Step up to the plate and make that place a free country. They need to have the same opportunities down there that we have up here. And it's not natural resources that they're making their way up here for. Alright? It's not for a better climate. Okay? Mexico, much nicer climate than Mexico. Alright? Not for better food. Much better food can be had there. Now, gotta be something down there to making these people flee Mexico to come here. Alright? It's that simple. Alright, elsewhere in the news, even though we're running straight on a time, one thing is kind of crazy here. This came down a couple hours before the show started. The U.S. Senate senior Democrat broke with the president today over the proposed Muslim Cultural Center and mosque in New York City. Senator Harry Reid saying it should be built elsewhere. Where? Ooh, I want to get on something here. Better stop and think about it here. He might not be on the same boat as the president. The project, planned near the Ground Zero site of September 11, 2001 attacks in New York, has emerged as an emotional issue 2.5 months before U.S. congressional elections, in which Republicans are trying to take back control of Congress from Obama's fellow Democrats. Now, Reid is in a tight contest for re-election against the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution protects freedom of religion. Senator Reid respects that, but thinks that the mosque should be built someplace else, said Reid spokesman Jim Manley. Now, the project backers vowed today to press ahead with their plans and denied a report in Israeli newspaper Haaretz that they will scrap the $100 million project, which has generated fierce debate. Sharif Al-Gamal, that will be located, said a report that the center would be relocated further from Ground Zero, reported in Israeli newspaper Haaretz on Monday, was false. Everything is on track and we are moving forward with the location, said Al-Gamal, a chief executive of Soho Properties, which owns the building. Haaretz told reporters, reported that leaders agreed to abandon the site to prevent an escalation of anti-Muslim sentiment this spring, which has caused an uproar among most New Yorkers, not many, who feel the location of this center is insensitive to the memory of the nearly 3,000 people who died in the September 11 attacks. Now, on Friday, the debate over the construction of the Muslim center intensified when President Barack Obama said he supported the right of Muslims to build there. A day later, and amid political backlash, commenting on the wisdom of making a decision to put a mosque there, and said he was commenting very specifically on the right people have that dates back to our founding. Now, the proposed 13-story New York City agency would include meeting rooms, a prayer space, an auditorium, and a swimming pool. Geez, I didn't think they went for swimming. I didn't think they could swim. Where'd they learn to swim in the desert? The families of some victims of the September 11 attack on the World Trade Center have been vehemently opposed to the construction of a Muslim center so close to Ground Zero. Close to 60% of the Americans are opposed to the plan, although supporters say having the Islamic culturing of the religion and begin healing nearly a decade after the attacks. Man, there are always going to be people that do that. There are people that would let Charles Manson out of jail thinking it's inhuman. The site cleared a major political roadblock earlier this month when the city's Landmarks Preservation Commission refused to grant it a special designation. The move means the existing building can be torn down and replaced by a 13-story community center, complete with fitness center, conference room, and artist studios. Now, the plain building as envisioned will not feature either minaret or dome or any other motif typically associated with a mosque. Still, some oppose it being built while the buildings set to replace the World Trade Center have not been completed and the memorial plan for the site not yet open. Now, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has been a strong proponent of the project, even as his approval ratings have taken a hit because of it. Some families of the victims of September 11, 2001 attacks have also supported the project. Well, yeah, they don't give you their names. Of course, they're going to tell you Bloomberg's going to do this, but let's face it, Bloomberg is scared shitless of Muslims coming up and taking him out while he is still in duty there. You know, there are those but I mean, let's face it. You know, how has the left been reacting to the Muslims all along? Oh, we don't understand them. Oh, it's their culture. Oh, we are the ones that brought this on ourselves. And, you know, a million other things. You know, anybody but blaming on the radical Islamic nut jobs, you know, that have been beating this into the heads of these kids in madrasas for the last 25 years. You know, blame it on anything except for the nut jobs who you know, who are teaching kids that the best thing they can do in life is die. You know, blame it on anybody else, of course. You know, but let's not go blame it on the real people. You know, well, that's the way liberals work. Liberals will never, ever, ever attack somebody that they think might attack them back. They'll never do it. You know, they have no problem with us because they don't think any of us are going to attack them back. And of course we're not going to attack them. We laugh at them. I mean, let's face it. You know, we laugh at the left. We always have, you know. Why wouldn't we? But there you have it, folks. You know, in a nutshell, nuttiness is reigning supreme. But Harry Reid, if he's coming out with a statement like this, he thinks he's in trouble in Nevada. Let's face it. Harry Reid has stuck his nose out to the wind and does not like what he smells. All right? I would expect more of the same to be coming from a whole lot other Democrat incumbents that are trying to keep their jobs as they campaign down the road here. Now, will Obama be helping them with this?
The shadow knows.
But I don't think anybody else knows. That's for damn sure. Yeah, it's going to be pretty much fun, folks. But we are kicking off the season here. It will not be long. We are approximately 2 months out from the elections. 2.5. And it's going to be quite the time, folks. You're going to see quite a few things coming down here. Don't forget, this is the ejection election of 2010, where we clean this Congress out and replace it with fresh faces. You know, I urge you all to take a good, strong look at your candidates, to question them, to call them on the phone, to call their people that are with them, and find out exactly where they stand on every single little issue that matters to you. You know, be specific. All right, folks, but with that, I specifically have got to go help out the Bader D closing up here tonight. I'm running a little late. Once again, as always, the tables are getting piled high with the chairs. The lights are growing dim, so it's time to close the cafe down, folks. But as always, the bar will be open, so come on down. I'm always buying the first round for everybody. Matter of fact, yeah, might even have some snacks left over for everybody who wants to hang out and have a little bit to munch on whilst we yak away here into the night in Politics Lobby 4, Patriots Unite Voice Room over on Pal Talk. So I want to thank you once again. Folks, you have listened to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in Internet talk radio. Thanks for coming, folks. We'll see you next week.